What really gets my dick hard is...
So fucking what?
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast, episode 11. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
And we are here finally getting to Jason Newsted.
The Jason Newsted episode.
Yeah. This is going to be a good one. I would say overall, I'm a Cliff Burton guy, but you can't not love Jason Newsted. I mean, when I first got into Metallica, Jason was the bass player. So I love Jason. I've had more time in my life with Jason. Not personally, but just, you know, on record.
Yeah, I agree. Like, for me, he's my favorite. I think Cliff contributed more in terms of like legacy stuff.
Sure.
But as far as like when I came online, which is a phrase I use a lot on this podcast, Jason was the dude. I think to this day, he was the best hype man in the band. A lot of heart, a lot of energy, a lot of passion.
Oh, yeah. But before we get into this, you want to stop looking at me. By the way,
should we tell?
We should spill the beans here. There's about six to eight minutes of Clint and I, as you can hear, uncontrollably laughing for not, there's not really a good reason for it.
It's the church giggles.
It is the church giggles. I'm gonna, I can't even face you right now. I'm turning around.
So you're turning from me?
No, I'm turning towards you. I'm trying to work back into this, but maybe we'll put that at the end of the episode or something, because that's way too long of an intro of us just giggling.
I promise, other than alcohol, no drugs were involved, but we did spend about 7 minutes straight laughing.
Yeah, it's very true. And I still feel like every time I look at you, I'm going to get the church giggles.
So before we get into our Jason episode, we're going to read a few forum questions or comments, and we're going to try to do this every episode because we've been getting a lot of feedback.
Yeah.
We did our fan episode a few episodes back. And it's just, we're getting too much to just save all that for one episode a month. So we're going to just sort of incorporate a few of our emails or comments or whatever.
I think it's a good idea to do, at the top of every episode, just one or two, just to, you know, hear what people are saying.
I agree. And so these are some messages from the Metallica forum, which if you're a Metallica fan, and if you somehow found this podcast and you're not active on that forum, it's a really cool, rad community.
It's free.
It's free. It costs $0.
$0 to be a Met Club member.
Which $0, pretty cheap.
You can't really beat that.
It's pretty cheap.
You could beat it if they paid you to be a member.
So these are comments from one of our former episodes. I think it was a Black Album episode, but I just wanted to read a few of these. Melody says, great episode as usual. Thanks for discussing my question. We read her question on the episode. Nice. You guys are too funny.
Aw, thanks, Melody.
P.S. Tell Ethan to keep up the Torben voice. It's pretty funny.
It's my pleasure.
I like that it's like, it's pretty funny. It's okay.
I'll take pretty funny.
Lori Laker says, keep zat.
So she like phonetically spelled it out, keep zat.
Lori's a dude, I think we've established. That's our friend with the name that sounds like a lady's name, but he's a dude.
Yeah.
He actually posted a picture of himself on the forum, and he looks like a 2003 era James Hetfield.
No big deal. That's awesome.
NBD.
I wish I could look like any era James Hetfield.
CSBBB89 says, I would say let the Torben voice keep happening. It gets a pretty good laugh out of me every time, and you guys just need to keep being doing you. This podcast has been great up to this point. I totally wouldn't change a thing.
Oh, did you put totally in quotes?
He did.
Good for him.
He did.
Thanks, man.
Real M. George says, Torben's appearances are radio gold. I wish we were on the radio.
A lot of Torben fans out there.
Let's see. I'll read just a few more of these because a lot of these are brief.
Okay.
Ferox says, just finished listening to the Black Album episode. Well done, gentlemen. I found myself laughing out loud quite a bit at some of your comments and commentary. I enjoy your back and forth banter. Feels like I'm hanging with Metallica buddies and talking shop.
Nice.
Guess what? You are.
You 100% are. That's how me and Clint feel when we record every episode, minus the church giggles. that's kind of why we started it and why we continue to do it. I mean, we're just two friends that want to talk about Metallica and put microphones in front of our faces and hit record.
We're just like you. We put on our Metallica pants. One leg at a time. The Hatest, which with a name like The Hatest.
The Hatest.
Like he hates
this
shit.
This is going to be bad.
I thought like, oh boy, here we go. It's not all bad. Okay. Although there is, he does live up to his name a little bit. He says, I dig the podcast, guys. At first, I was a little irked by the little trivia mistakes, but I've grown to really enjoy them as they add uniqueness and personality to the show, especially when Ethan dropped the ball on Outlaw Torn.
Yeah, here we go again. Awesome.
I really appreciate that you guys aren't putting on airs, and you both seem pretty genuine.
Pretty genuine.
Plus, the fact that you're actually putting something out there is so much more than myself or most anyone else can say. I'm curious when you're going to do the Justice episode. Keep recording, releasing them. I'll keep listening.
We're curious, too.
We don't know.
That's one of those records. you know, we came in hot with the first three episodes, which are the first three records, or episode, you know, 2, 3, 4. But yeah, Justice. We're definitely going to do it. But you know, I think we're going to wait a little bit. We got to kind of keep that one in the chamber.
Yeah,
I think so. I mean,
keep it in the chamber.
You know, talking about guns.
I like that metaphor. Yeah, we're going to do Justice. We're just kind of, we've already blown through 5 or 6 of the records.
Five records, yeah. So, I mean, that's half their catalog as far as full-length studio albums go. So we don't want to jump through all those so fast that, you know, the only episodes you get to hear are us talking about, like, you know, oh, this show in 97 where, you know, this happened.
And we don't want to, like, end the podcast after 15 episodes.
I don't know. I kind of do.
Really?
No. Okay. I want to do this forever.
Let's do it forever, man.
Yeah, man, forever. No, I don't want to end this thing at any point in the foreseeable future, but yeah, we got to be a little choosy with where certain...
But we've come up with some really cool ideas about stuff to do. We've mentioned that we're going to do contests. We're going to do more topics that engage fans. Yep. We're going to do a live show from a venue here in town.
Yeah,
we're
that's coming up.
We're going to try to catch the Hardwire tour. We're going to do a show from the parking lot of the Hardwire tour.
Yeah, and one thing me and Clint have talked about a bunch, which we're trying to figure out, is a little tough with how busy we both are, but we would love to incorporate more video stuff with our podcast, whether it's just a video feed of us recording it, or we do exclusive content to put on YouTube and stuff like that, like Clint and I may be covering Metallica songs. I don't know if that even interests you. Just somehow incorporating video, you know, I don't know. We're trying to expand this thing as much as we can. So
we do record every episode in the nude. So
yeah, and it's cold outside tonight, so it's, you can real only cold. Imagine.
Let's get into it with Jason Newsted.
Yeah, for sure. Jason Newsted. Who doesn't love Jason Newsted? If you're listening and you don't love Jason Newsted, keep listening, but I don't agree with you.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, Jason Newsted, born March 4th, 1963 in Battle Creek, Michigan.
I've never, out of all the weird, strange cities I've been in my travels, I've never been to Battle Creek, Michigan.
I've heard of Battle Creek. I've never been there. But yeah, I mean, Jason spent a lot of his... upbringing in Michigan.
Interesting.
That's where he found his love of metal. That's where he learned music. That's where he started one of his first bands, which we'll get into a little bit. We don't want to go too deep into, like, you know, all the nitpicky stuff about, you know, because we want to talk about Jason in
what
Metallica.
What was his favorite color?
Oh, of course it was dark gray.
What was his favorite holiday?
So Jason Newsted grew up in a musical family. His mom taught piano. His brother played trumpet. He learned guitar first at 9 years old.
I think most bass players learn guitar first.
I would hope so. I mean, I don't call myself a bass player, but I can play bass.
And same. But most people don't, like, aspire to be a bass player.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I mean, I'm not slagging. Dude, James Jamerson and Paul McCartney are some of my favorite musicians of
course,
all time.
Yeah.
Jacob Astor, you know, but... But those guys, maybe not Jaco, but I know that James Jamerson and Paul McCartney played guitar. And
yeah.
They ended up playing bass out of necessity.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think Jason's story was out of necessity, but I know that, and you'll appreciate this, being a big Kiss fan, he switched to bass at age 14 because he saw or listened to Gene Simmons playing bass on Kiss records.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he became a Kiss fan, heard what Gene Simmons was doing, was like, I got to play that.
Gene Simmons... And as you know, maybe some of the listeners who've heard previous episodes know, I'm a huge Kiss fan.
Yeah.
And Gene Simmons is truly an underrated bass player. His decisions, his melodic sensibility as a bass player are add a lot to what makes Kiss songs timeless and interesting.
For sure, yeah, absolutely.
So that's interesting. So he's a Kiss fan.
And if I could do a quick little tangent, there's another podcast called Podcast Rock City, and those dudes have given us a little shout out from time to time. You've conversed with them through email and stuff like that. But I just, since we're talking about Kiss briefly, I wanted to give them a shout out and say, great job on your podcast.
Totally. If you like Kiss at all, check out Podcast Rock City. Yeah. Joe and Jody, they're my homeboys.
They've got a lot of episodes out.
They've got over, I think, like 140 episodes. And those dudes know their stuff. It's super fun.
Yeah.
So shout out to those dudes. What's up, Podcast Rock City dudes? Yeah. All right, so he becomes a Kiss fan, and he switches to bass because of Gene Simmons.
Yeah, switches to bass, and then one of his first bands, which I was wanted to mention earlier, but this gives me the church giggles.
Yeah.
One of Jason's early bands was called Gangster. Gangster. From Battle Creek, Michigan.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that didn't stick.
Yeah, me too.
I'm really shocked that a band from the early 80s from Michigan called Gangster didn't hit the mainstream.
Totally. But, you know, that band Gangster is what led him to Flotsam and Jetsam.
Do we know if any, like, recordings exist from Gangster?
I didn't dive too deep into Gangster's musical history.
Well, I'm shocked.
Well, you know, I just had, you know, all the 5 minutes I spent on it didn't pan out. But, no, I didn't go too far into that because this is a Metallica podcast. I want to kind of get through a lot of these details. But that band eventually traveled to Phoenix, Arizona, where Flotsam and Jetsam was based, and Jason answered an ad in a paper. The one thing I was unclear on, if someone out there can clear me up on it, was the article I read was that his band traveled to Phoenix and he answered an ad in a paper before that, but that didn't make sense to me because this is all pre-internet. I don't think you're getting a Phoenix paper in Battle Creek, Michigan. So I'd like to believe that they were kind of on the road doing some shows, ended up in Phoenix. He saw an ad in the paper for a bass player position, which ended up being Flotsam and Jetsam.
You know who I bet knows that information?
Jason Newsted. He probably does.
He might know. I was thinking maybe Samim.
Samim
probably knows. If you guys listened to our last episode of Letters from Samim, segment.
That's a new segment we're going to start.
Which was a big hit, by the way.
It was a big hit.
We've gotten a lot of feedback.
And if
about
your
it.
Name is Samim and you live in Turkey, you need to keep writing us so we can keep doing a segment, the Samim segment. So, Letters from Samim, it's our new thing.
So, Flotsam and Jetsam was already an established band. They were just looking for a bass player.
Established, I think, is a little bit of a loose term. They were a band, but they were looking for a bass player. But before they even called Flotsam and Jetsam, they were called a bunch of other ridiculous band names. I want to read these. If you don't know them, you're in for a treat. Because originally they were called Paradox. Mm-hmm. Then Dreadlocks with an X on the end. Followed by The Dogs with a Z. The Dogs.
That's clever.
Is it?
No.
No. I know that the last name, The Dogs with a Z, did not last long. They eventually settled on Flotsam and Jetsam, which was from The Two Towers, a Tolkien book.
That's so deep, bro.
Very deep. Jason Newsted ended up in Phoenix, Arizona with these guys from, you know, you might know them as Dreadlocks, but Flotsam and Jetsam. And he was with them from 81 to 86.
Was he a primary songwriter in the band?
He was for their first record, which got critical acclaim back then. I was very young. I didn't read that critical acclaim, but everything I've read, Doomsday for the Deceiver was, and I've listened to that record. It's a great record.
You weren't getting Metal Blade magazine when you were 5 years old?
Record came out in 86, I was eight.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I wasn't getting...
Not a Metal Blade subscriber at that
no,
age.
No, not yet, no. I wasn't getting Hit Parader just yet. So the first full length that Flotsam and Jetsam did was Doomsday for the Deceiver. They did a couple demos, and Jason played bass, obviously, and also wrote the majority of the lyrics on the record, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
So moving ahead, I'm trying to get through this as fast as possible to get to Metallica. So he was with them and played his last show with Flotsam and Jetsam, Halloween 1986. At that point, had already been hired by Metallica.
Right, so he'd already auditioned and been offered the gig.
Right, October, I believe, is when he got hired by Metallica. He was obviously the third bassist in Metallica.
Imagine how his former band members felt, like, probably a mixture of, like, excited for their friend Jason, but yeah. also kind of, like, envious and bummed and...
Oh, man, this is our friend from Battle Creek, like...
And, like, he gets to go be in Metallica now while we just continue slugging it out in, like, a local club scene.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they, like, I know Flotsam and Jetsam, like, back in the early 80s, like, got to open for a bunch of cool bands, like, probably out in L.A. and stuff like that. But if you're Jason Newsted, I mean, you probably know who Metallica is already. You should, at least. I mean, you know, at the time, Master of Puppets was their most current record. Not commercially successful, but still huge. With
definitely their biggest record to date at that time.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, no radio support, no, there's no MTV. They're not on that. They haven't filmed a video. None of that even happened till one. So, but if you're in the metal scene, thrash metal scene, like you should know who Metallica is at, mm-hmm. at this point in time.
Oh, for sure.
At this point in time.
For sure.
But yeah, so got hired in October, after about a month after the death of Cliff Burton. He was the last audition of over 50 bass players.
Yeah, and I read that he showed up first. Jason was always sort of prided himself on this sort of like first in, last out vibe. Mm-hmm. And he had gotten a set list somehow, learned the whole set list, like very eager on the front end, very yeah. like really did his homework. Kind of like Jason, I feel like Jason's whole deal throughout the whole, his whole tenure in Metallica, he was just an intense dude.
Very, yeah.
He's just like just 100% intense guy.
Yeah.
So he was the last dude to audition.
Well, he also had a lot to prove.
Right.
I mean, Cliff Burton's shoes are, you can't fill them at all.
And like, Metallica was his favorite band.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine the pressure? Like, it's not only that you're the new bass player in Metallica, but the bass player that everybody loved died. And it's been a month.
Right.
So these dudes aren't even like, they're not even close to over it.
Well, Jason, there's an interesting interview with Jason. I can't, it's a British interview with some sort of British, a British thing.
A British thing.
He's a generic noun. And he talks about how when he like showed up for the audition, like everyone in Metallica was like super drunk. He said they woke up and went to bed drinking because they were sort of grieving.
Of course, yeah. I'm sure they
and
were.
And he said
yeah.
that. Because they were sort of hitting really hard at that time in management, they sort of decided to just keep pushing forward
yeah.
and not really take any time off. And he said that the vibe in the audition was like dismal, you know, like
I can only imagine, man. That
he was like they were basically he was like, you know, within a month of Cliff dying, I was in that room playing his rig.
Yep.
And he said they were just looking at me like I was in their boy's spot. And it was more of like management was like, we have to just fill the spot.
I'm sure even in their drunken state, they realize, well, we have to do this, but we 100% do not want to.
He tells a story about a dude who auditioned for the gig who flew like from all the way across the world.
Oh my gosh.
And showed up, but he just didn't look right. Like he had like funny haircut and like dress weird. And then before he even plugged his bass in, James goes, next. And the dude had spent all day flying there. Like and it was just that
how much money getting there. I mean,
just that brutal.
That sucks. Les Claypool from Primus was one of the auditionees.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't know how you feel about Primus, but
I like Primus.
I grew up listening to Primus. They were one of the bands I would skate to.
Yeah.
When I go to the skate park or skate around town.
I don't think our listeners know, but you're a skateboarding advocate.
Yes, I love skating.
Yeah.
Still do it. I don't do anything stupid anymore. I don't do anything that takes me off the ground. I just cruise.
The only way I can riff with you on this is no ollies?
No.
All I know is ollie. A 50-50 truck grind?
I'll ollie here and there, but no, I just do it for pleasure. I just go to the skate park here in Nashville. I cruise around, find these little runs. It's just something fun to do.
And when you tour, you kind of seek out like, little
yeah,
skate
yeah.
spots.
Yeah, actually, when we recorded the episode where you were in Miami and I was in Detroit.
The Hardwired episode.
Yep. About 30 minutes after we finished that episode, I was in a car with a buddy who picked me up and went to a skate park.
Cool.
Yeah, super fun.
If I got on a skateboard, within 5 seconds, I would fall and break every bone in my body. I just know that about myself.
I've just been skating since I was a kid, and I've never gotten really good, but I've always loved it. I mean, that's what you do in Southern California, either surf or skate. And fortunately for me, play guitar. And once I started playing music, I just didn't want to get any better at skateboarding and try new things because to me, that equaled, I'm going to break something at
some point. That's exactly how I feel. Yeah.
So, but I still skate. I do what I can do and try not to break my wrist.
If something's like wrong with my car and I pop the hood, they're like, people just say, oh, just put your hand in there and find. I'm like, no. I just envision my hand getting ripped off and then I'm just living in destitution for the rest of my life. Totally. Okay. So, I guess this is kind of trivia shit, but he's actually not the second bass player of Metallica. He's the third.
Oh, yeah. He's the third. Yeah. Ron McGovney, Cliff Burton. Yeah.
And there's another Metallica podcast we should mention called Metalla Chat.
Yeah.
Which you guys should check it out. If you're in as deep as we are, then you can't get enough of all this shit.
Oh, yeah.
And they were recently getting a little slagged on because they did not know about Ron McGovney.
Which I find, and no disrespect to those guys, but I find a little fascinating because I just remember when I first got into Metallica, like, I wanted to know about all the guys in the band and... You know, I got into him on Injustice, so there's Jason, but like, oh no, there was Cliff Burton before, and like, oh my gosh. And
yeah.
I don't know.
I'll say I didn't know about Ron McGovney until maybe 10 years into being a fan.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, so for me, I more empathize with them.
Okay, fair enough. To each his own. I would guess that I back then I didn't stutter this much, but...
Back then, you didn't have a speech.
I was fortunate enough to have befriended a lot of like metal dudes when I started junior high that like really educated me on the details of Metallica.
Right, because none of you had girlfriends or anything. It's just
not really
boys club.
Mostly boys
club. I just used that opportunity to bring up Metalla Chat because I just wanted to give a shout out to those dudes.
Yeah, for sure. The only other Metallica podcast we know about.
The only other one we know of.
We thought we were the only one for a bit.
Yeah. And should we have them killed?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe, yeah. It took me a really long time
to think about it.
What's funny is my wife actually found their podcast before I did. I was searching everything I could think of in the podcast world. Is there another Metallica podcast out there? I found one, like an article about one, and it... never really like came to fruition, like nothing happened. It was right. Like it was called Podcast for All or something like that. And I clicked on the link and there was nothing, and then I looked it up on iTunes, nothing.
So they don't even have a single episode,
not that I could find. I've found episodes on Metallica, but there's not a Metallica specific podcast until we found Metallica.
If you guys do go check out Metallica Chat, tell them that Metal Up Your Podcast sent you.
Yeah,
and you will receive $1,000.
And you will receive one shout out from Torben. It is my pleasure.
Metallica Chat is...
So yeah, Jason, third bass player of Metallica. Big shoes to fill, but what a fucking job he did.
Yeah, I mean, shit. I think Jason kicked ass.
Of course he did, yeah. Band. And we've talked about this before. He became Metallica's first hype man.
Sure.
He was the guy when James wasn't singing on breakdown parts. He was getting the crowd fucking going.
And, you know, his voice is similar to James's. It's not as dynamic or interesting.
But he's got that growl.
But he's got, like, when he was able to sing a verse of Whiplash or sing a verse of Seek and Destroy or do the die parts of Creeping Death.
Oh, yeah.
And getting the, hey, like, he was always the dude getting that going.
Oh, yeah. But no one did that before.
Did they ever do the hey thing before Jason?
James might have done stuff like that, like by himself, but once Jason joined the band, it was like James could rely on him to get the crowd going while he's catching his breath, or you know.
It has been fun seeing like Robert come into his own as.
Yeah.
I mean, Robert's been in the band I think longer than Jason at this point.
Not yet, almost, very close.
And that's. Like, you know, so Jason had to basically fill Robert's shoes or fill Cliff's shoes.
Yeah.
But Robert had to fill Jason and Cliff's shoes.
Yep.
So, and we're going to do a whole episode on Robert.
I mean, that's two pairs of shoes.
That's literally four shoes.
It's impossible. No, we love Robert. We're not dogging him at all. But that's, yeah.
But this is our Jason episode. And I just want to take a moment to say, like, Robert's having to, like, honor what Jason did just.
As much as Cliff.
As much as Cliff.
Yeah, for sure. Know? Absolutely.
Okay, so where are we at on this? His first show, November 8th, 1986, which was like a small club show, right?
Yeah, it was in, I think it was in Reseda, California.
Which, like, you have to, like, really put yourself in his in his four shoes, in all the 8 to 18 of his shoes.
All 18 of them.
He shows up to that intimate club gig, and Cliff was super beloved.
Yeah.
So, like, and this is not so only, fresh after his death.
Not only is the band, like, immediately resentful of him.
Right. But fans, too.
Fans, yeah, for sure.
Whereas when Robert joined, I felt like Metallica learned from their mistakes and really, like, took care to, like, make Robert feel like a part of the band on the front end.
And there was
end.
Enough time that went by, like, in between Jason and when Robert...
Well, they made the whole record and...
Yeah. When Robert's first show was, like, MTV Icon.
Right. Which is awkward.
Yeah, super awkward.
I've been an icon for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But with Jason, it's like he was just literally thrown into the fucking deep end, dude.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Having to prove himself to the band, to the fans.
Yeah.
I imagine that was a tough show to start on.
Very tough.
Like, if he'd gone straight into sort of an arena show or a stadium show or a big festival, he could have felt like sort of that disconnection. You know, when you play a festival, it's like... But a club show, you're just in it with those people.
Oh, man. Yeah. I would like to imagine that he just stared at his left hand on the fretboard of his bass the whole time. Or maybe he just fucking owned it and was up on the mic and doing, you know, the hype man stuff that we love him for.
I doubt he got on the mic a lot, but I bet he owned the show.
That's one of those shows, foolishly, forgive me, listeners. I've never looked up on YouTube if there was some sort of bootleg video of that first show.
How dare you?
I know.
I've never done it either.
How dare you?
How dare me?
How dare you? But yeah, Jason comes into the band on really the wrong foot. I mean, they're all just fucking hammered all the time, and they're resentful that he's in the band. They want Cliff back.
Well,
and this goes on for a while.
I think for at least 6 months, but Jason has in recent interviews basically said that the hazing period lasted about 6 months.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true.
I think that's way longer if you listen to Injustice for All.
In my personal opinion, just a fan's opinion, I think his hazing lasted his entire career in the band. I think that the way that it all went down was just proof that he never rose to the level of peer. And we're going to get to how he split from the band, because that's an interesting story.
Yeah,
very. But before we get all bummed about that, let's keep getting excited about...
Don't get bummed yet. There's so much more to talk about.
I do think it's cool that the first recording he did was Garage Days.
Yeah.
Because you know, we're going to talk about the bass, the lack of bass on Justice, but you can hear the bass in that record.
Very much so, yeah.
I mean, the bass kicks ass. That record kicks ass. It's fun.
It's a cover EP.
But it's very live and immediate, and like it sounds like those dudes in a room just duking it out.
The thing that's interesting about that EP is that when you listen to it, like there's times you can hear like Lars counting off songs, and like there's little tiny details like in the recording where someone's doing something stupid in a microphone. Excuse me. It sounds like they're having a good time.
Right.
But we know from, you know, interviews with Jason and
it's kind of rose colored. Yeah.
They didn't like Jason, or they didn't, you know, want him there because it wasn't Cliff. But you hear that recording and it's like, man, the energy's there. Like there's, you know, it sounds like great chemistry.
Yeah.
But we know that it wasn't, which is unfortunate. Yeah,
it's one of the bummers of being like really in the thick of shit with a band for so long is really kind of learning what was true.
Right.
And it kind of shatters a sort of pristine illusion you have about what that might have been like.
You pointed out he kind of went through the hazing his whole career. I mean, just the first year or two, I mean, he put up with so much shit. Like, I mean, I think in the Behind the Music, they talk about Jason and the guys talk a lot about like what they put him through, like pulling like not just fun pranks, but like shitty pranks on him, like when they're on the road and stuff like that, you know, doing stuff to his hotel room.
Well, they would like charge, you know, like charge all the room service and stuff to his room and
all that stuff
or whatever. What's the wasabi thing? Are they like made him eat wasabi or there's some shit like that? And
I'm trying to remember that. Fuck. I'm bad.
You're bad, dude.
I'm a bad fan.
Never mind that I can't remember it either.
But either way, I mean, Jason endured some crazy shit with those guys.
I think so. And like, he's taken care to say in recent interviews that like the benefits of being a Metallica far outweighed the bullshit.
Sure.
But
it's still kind of surprising that he lasted as long as he did.
That is very interesting.
I mean, imagine coming into a band where your bass player, your beloved bass player, dies in a bus accident. And the only thing in life you want is for him to be back.
Yeah.
And you feel forced to audition all these guys by your management company.
Right.
And here comes this guy who you don't even know, who is just super excited and plays with a pick, not his fingers, and is nothing like Cliff Burton. Not even close, I think.
I agree.
And that's not a knock on Jason at all. Well, he's just a very different bass player.
It seems like it became a knock on Jason later, which I don't think is fair. Like when Lars says, like, oh, we love Robert because he plays like Cliff, it's like, you hired Jason Newsted. You didn't, you know, like, you could have had anyone in the world.
Right.
Don't slag him.
And he's been
banned
for like 14 years.
Man, we're getting into the what's really dense about this issue.
Yeah.
Now that he's in the band, like, so let's get to Justice, right? So. Yeah.
Justice, his first full-length record.
Which is our collectively second favorite Metallica record.
My second, for sure.
It's my second.
And it's one of those records that I don't think I really cared or even paid attention to the lack of bass on that record until I was way older and a more experienced musician.
Yeah, because it's pretty glaring.
Yeah, you listen to it now and it's like, ooh, no bass at all. Very flat sounding, very dry sounding.
It does make the record, upon like reflection and time and retrospection, hard to listen to. I still listen to it a lot.
I still love it. I mean, I still, knowing what I know about music now and about production and mixing and all this stuff, I listen to it and I always think about it like, oh man, I wish I could hear the actual bass tracks on this record. But I've listened to that record for so long.
Me too.
It's just in my brain and it doesn't.
Well, here's the deal. And this is sort of like just a small example of like what's happened a lot through Metallica's career is like oddball things about their records or about them becomes what's special about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, Justice, you can't hear the bass. There's no low end.
Right.
But it's like the sound of that record. And dude, that record made its mark in history for sure.
Well, and Jason has said almost your exact quote. I mean, he stole that from me, by the way. He definitely did.
He heard me say that somewhere.
I think it was in the Eddie Trunk podcast episode with Cliff. I'm sorry, I said Cliff.
Oh, boy. With Cliff's Gus.
Sorry, Jason. No, the Eddie Trunk episode recently, a couple months ago, I guess, with Jason, and he talks about it. He's like, you know what? That record is what it is. Like,
right.
It was a you know, pinnacle part of Metallica's career. Happy to be a part of it. If one day, you know, Fleming wants to go back and have it remixed, great. But he's not holding his breath.
Well, and he said, like, he's like, man, at that time, I was so green. Like, I didn't know.
Yeah.
He's like, all I knew was, like, Flotsam and Jetsam records,
right,
where you go in, you do your bass for 6 hours, you leave.
Yeah.
He was like, dude, like, my world was spinning. Because they recorded that record on the Monsters of Rock tour.
Yeah.
So they were, like, doing Monsters of Rock tour, which was a massive tour for them.
Huge, yeah.
And only, so he went in for 2 days. He did all of his parts in 2 days.
Yeah.
And then James and Lars, in between, like, during the week, because Monsters of Rock was on weekends, they were, like, flying to wherever, L.A., to mix. He was like, dude, me and Kirk weren't part of that.
Yeah.
All I knew was I did my thing. I played the same rig I played on Garage Days.
Yeah.
I did the thing I've always done. And it's been said that maybe the bass was like part of the hazing process, but I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
James and Lars aren't going to sabotage a record just to haze their new bass player.
But the other thing that James and Lars have gone on record as to saying is that the bass line, the bass tone
was too much like the guitar.
Like the guitar, but which, sure, like, it can be the same exact thing as the guitar riff.
But it's still a bass register.
But where's the low end?
Exactly. That excuse does not hold water for me.
Yeah. And not, I'm with you. Yeah.
I think what happened, like, I don't think it was them sabotaging their record because of Jason and Cliff. I think that explanation is silly. I think it's just that the two guys who oversaw the mix were the guitar player and the drummer.
Mm-hmm.
So guess what's going to happen in the mixing room? More drums, more guitar.
And more vocals.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So just, and Fleming as an engineer and producer has gone on the record and saying, like, there wasn't like sonic room for low end, because Justice is where they started doing the thickener.
Yeah.
Where instead of just the panned left, right, double guitar, they put the one down the center.
Right. The thickener. Yeah.
Which, that's like a metal band name waiting to happen.
The thickener. Yeah. Fortunately for Jason, a lot of people don't love Bob Rock coming into the band's career. However, I think it was a benefit for Jason because the Black Album was full of low end.
And here's what you can't take away from Jason is he was the bass player on the Black Album, their biggest record.
Yep. The Black Album.
You know, I know it's not Puppets. I know it's not Ride the Lightning, but it's the fucking Black Album.
Yeah, exactly.
And even though it's inaudible, he's on Justice.
Yeah.
I mean, shit.
Yeah, I mean, there's YouTube videos dedicated to him called Injustice for Jason.
Right.
That people either have remastered it, somehow remixed something, and it bumped low end. I mean, I have friends that have recorded bass to that record and uploaded it to YouTube.
Right.
It's in, like, people are still that they are, tore up about it.
They have no wives and no lives, but they did do that.
One of my friends has no wife, but has a life.
I'm just kidding.
There's a dude named James Honeycutt, great songwriter from Seattle. And he is a big metalhead. And he recorded bass over Justice and uploaded it to YouTube. I'll send it to you.
Hey, man, good to see you. What are you been up to? You know. Just hanging out in my basement, recording bass to an old Metallica record.
It was awesome. I did it on one song. It
took me 18 months.
I never uploaded it, but I was bored one day, and I was like, what would Short of Straw sound like with bass, you know? So I recorded it for fun.
It is one of the reasons that I always prefer, like, when they're in their element live, hearing Justice songs live.
Yeah.
I always prefer that.
Yeah.
It's because it just sounds more like a band, the bass being part of it.
Right.
And it is a very, like, cold record. Like, it's very precise and surgical.
Yes.
And part of that suits kind of the subject matter of the record.
Yeah.
Like, there is something really special about that record. The songs, the lyrics, the production. It's
my second favorite record.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I do like hearing it live a little warmer, a little more human sounding.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it's kind of robotic.
It is.
Okay, so then Jason does Black Album. You're right. Bob Rock brings out the bass. Thank goodness.
He talks about it in A Year and a Half. I mean, A Year in the Half is what I said. A Year and a Half. Sorry, it's getting late here. My
A Year in the Half.
A Year in the Half.
A Year in the Half.
Are you? I think A Year in the Half is great. It's a great amount of time. Bob Rock talks about it in the documentary. He's like, you know, we need to get that low end that, you know, I think I could be totally wrong here, but I'm sure Bob Rock listened to their previous records before doing the Black
Album.
Oh,
he did. He went to see, his whole impetus for doing the record with them was he saw them live a few times in Canada and said, no one's captured you guys how you sound live.
Right. And I agree with him.
I do too.
I think he did a great job at that.
I do too.
But he talks, you know, there's a whole segment on Jason recording bass, like when he's behind that foam wall and like all that stuff. And, Bob Rock did a great job of, like, it's not like this overbearing bass tone, but the more I listen to that record, the more I can, you know, originally it's like, yeah, there's low end, there's bass there. But the older I get, the more I get experience as a musician, like I can listen to that record and hear all those little, you know, details that he did on that record.
I think the days of a producer like Bob Rock coming in and telling a band that big, like, what to do and what not to do are over.
Yeah, I would agree.
Even Greg Fiddleman, who we've mentioned on Hardwired, like, we love him. Hardwired kicks so much fucking ass.
Yes, it does.
But Greg's not like Bob Rock. Like, it's just a different time. He's not going to be telling them. Because, you know, famously, during the Black Album, Bob Rock and Metallica fought so hard that they both vowed to never work together again.
Oh, yeah. And three of the four members got divorced.
Right.
Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah, that was a very trying record for them, but obviously it, you know, went on to, you know, everything that happened during that recording.
I bet Jason loved working with Bob because Bob gave a shit.
He gave a shit and he paid attention to Jason.
Right.
He was like, oh, you're the bass player. Let's get bass sounds.
And that's why that record, it'd be tough to do a toe-to-toe Black Album versus Justice. That would be almost impossible for me to do. But I will say the Black Album sonically sounds better.
Of course, yeah.
All right, so what we got next? Are we jumping? Oh, we can't skip. So Load and Reload are interesting records because
I want to say something before we get into Load and Reload real quick. And this was at the intro to this episode. I love that and Jason didn't get a lot of songwriting credit. He got it on Blackened, mm-hmm. and his next songwriting credit was on
My Friend in Misery.
Yep, on this record, and it was initially written as an instrumental,
right?
And then they decided no instrumental on this record. But it's one of my favorite parts of this record.
Well, not only did they decide we don't want an instrumental, but they looked at that song and thought that's such a strong piece of music.
Yeah,
we're gonna like flesh this out.
Yeah, which is great. Flesh it out or flush it out?
Flush it out.
Flush it out.
Oh, Lord. Oh, God.
Can't jump that far ahead.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Load and Reload.
Which is his third and final co-write is Where the Wild Things Are from Reload.
Yeah.
Which is a very trippy, creepy song.
Yeah. If you go online, there's technically a couple other songwriting credits, but it's like from Live Shit, Binge and Purge. It's like bass
from,
solo,
from
bass
doodles, solo stuff. Yeah, which they call their solos doodles.
I don't love that.
I don't either.
Don't love it.
It's not a doodle. A doodle's what my 2.5-year-old does.
Yeah. And you can still, like, if you follow Metallica on Instagram, they'll post photos of their set list from whatever
show. And it says doodle.
It says Kirk Doodle, Robert Doodle.
Paradoodle.
James's daughter Doodle. You know.
Outlaw Torn Doodle. Okay. So, his last show was November 30, 2000. I remember watching this in real time on VH1 because it was a People's Choice Awards.
It was kind of like, there was the VH1 Music Awards. This one was called...
Or, I'm sorry, not People's Choice, but...
This was called My VH1 Music Awards.
But so Metallica, so there was a poll that went up until they played, which was, which song do you want to hear? And they were literally just sitting on stage and whichever song won, they were going to play whatever it was, and it ended up being Fade to Black.
Which is awesome.
And I remember sitting in my room, I mean, what year was this, 2000?
That's 2000, yeah.
So I was 16, 17, just going ape shit.
Yeah.
Because Fade to Black was kind of a treat at that time.
Yeah.
And James is wearing like this weird hoodie.
It's like a sleeveless hoodie. Yeah.
I had no idea that'd be the last time Jason would perform with him.
Well, he didn't quit till I think the next month. But that was his last performance. Because the next month, it was when they had like a meeting where Jason suggested that they take a year hiatus because...
I didn't know that I'd never heard that he went to Metallica and said, I want to take a year hiatus. Is that true?
That's what I've read. I don't know Jason. I can't confirm it. But what I have read is that he proposed in a meeting that they take a year-long hiatus.
The interview I saw today, which was that British cat I was telling you about earlier, is the guy said, is there a single moment where you knew you were going to quit Metallica? And Jason does this kind of classic intense Jason pause.
Yeah.
But that dude is just so intense.
Very intense.
And he goes, yeah, I know the exact moment and I've never told the story. And he tells a story about, so Echo Brain started to happen.
Right.
And it was a side project. He's like, I always jammed with other people.
Sure.
But what happened was Q Prime, Metallica's management, heard Echo Brain and got really excited.
Yeah,
about
they loved it. Yeah.
And basically went to Jason and said, hey, we actually want to do something with Echo Brain.
Yeah, we want
to
push it.
Exactly. Yeah. James heard about it and was super bummed.
Oh, yeah.
And then he gets a call from Q Prime saying, hey, we're not going to do anything with Echo Brain.
Well, it was like basically James's request, like, hey, don't.
So Jason, don't do or this. James kind of squashed it as far as Q Prime being involved.
Yeah.
So then Jason's like, well, that's weird, but I'm going to keep pushing Echo Brain.
Yeah.
So if they don't want to manage it, I'll find someone else. So then when they were doing the classic albums for Black Album, they were in LA at One-on-One Studios. And because there's footage of them like playing Enter Sandman in 2000.
Yeah.
And he said that like in between shooting segments for that, like Bob Rock was there and Jason was passing out Echo Brain CDs. And James comes in the room and was like not digging it.
Yeah.
So he said James pulled him aside at that when they filmed that classic album.
Wow, I didn't know.
James pulled him aside and said, "So what's going on with Echo Brain? What are you wanting to do?" And Jason said, "Well, as long as it doesn't interfere with Metallica, like we want to like tour." And he said, James goes, "Are you going to be selling T-shirts and merch?" And Jason said, "Yeah, probably." And James goes, "No."
No.
I'm not into it. And he said that James looked him in the eye. And this is, according to Jason, the moment he knew he was quitting Metallica.
Yeah.
He said, James looked him in the eye and said, arrangements can be made to replace you.
Wow.
And he said, he's like, dude, after 14 years, like
still hazing.
Everything we've been through, exactly.
Yeah.
He's like, everything we've been through, like achieving our goals together, like their goal to kind of reach the world, which they accomplished with Black Album.
Yeah, they did.
He's like, we did all that together.
Yeah.
And he was like, for him to look at me and basically say, you're expendable, he was like,
what a bummer.
And he said, that's when he knew.
Wow.
So he said he gave him like notice. He told Kirk from when they flew home from filming that, him and Kirk were at the airport having a beer. And he said he told Kirk that he was leaving. And he said, Kirk said, you need to think really hard about that. You really need to know if you're going to do it.
Yeah.
Then he said, Lars came out to the chop house, which he said never happened. Very rare. And he said he told Lars.
Like Lars just happened to, like, felt like coming out, or
he told Lars he needed to talk to him. And Lars came out to the chop house. And that's when he told Lars.
So James is the last one he told.
Yeah. Wow. But Lars didn't think he was going to do it. According to Jason, Lars's comment was, I'll beat you to it, to leaving Metallica.
So I wonder if when they had a meeting and Jason brought up taking a hiatus, had he already told Kirk? Or was this before that? Because everything, what I read online, recently was, they had a meeting about probably the upcoming record, which was maybe St. Anger or some shows, whatever. They had a meeting. Jason suggested, let's take a year hiatus. At that point, did he start telling Kirk and Lars, or did he tell them and then the meeting happened? Maybe that was his last.
I haven't heard anything about him suggesting a hiatus. What I imagine is, if he did suggest that he suggested it and it got squashed, and then he said, "Well, I'm leaving."
Yeah.
If there's no room for me to have a thing,
what I read was that was kind of the last thing. Like he suggested a hiatus, they turned it down, and he said, "Well, I quit."
Another thing I saw today that made me really bummed is that he was like, dude, when James was saying like, you can't sell t-shirts, he was like, I don't even remember what else he said because I was just like going red.
Yeah.
And he said he had the final meeting at the Four Seasons where he basically was letting him know he's quitting. And this is like famously where Phil was there, where he walked in and said, who are you? He was like, oh, my name's Phil. I help big corporations. Like, he had like a Super Bowl ring because he helped some football team. And Jason goes, well, I don't know who you are and you don't know me. You can get the fuck out of here.
Amazing.
So that's when he told him he was quitting. And this is what's really sad about it, especially as a guy who like loves Jason, is he said, you know what I was kind of hoping is that I would go home that night and the guys would kind of say, man, something's really wrong. Like, we really need to meet Jason halfway here.
Yeah.
Instead of them being like, okay, we accept your resignation. They kind of just said, we accept your resignation.
Okay, see you later. Like, they didn't fight for him.
Which is fucked up.
It's pretty fucked up. Especially at that point, I mean, you've been in the band for 14 years. With those dudes, I mean, like, yeah, of course you're not Cliff, but you've paid your dues with that band. Like, James, Lars, and Kirk can't go like, okay, hang on. Before you quit the band, let's sit down and talk about this.
If I'm looking at this from, if I'm trying to like be devil's advocate for Metallica, for like James's side, maybe, it really says a lot about something must not have clicked all those years with him and James. Because
because
when he kind of like wanted to like have his bluff called or whatever, James was like, see ya.
Yeah.
James wasn't like, and this is kind of pre-rehab, pre-sober James.
Yeah.
The new James is kind of like a more chill, enlightened dude.
It's way
different,
yeah. I mean,
but for James to be like, well, all right, fuck off. Like, for James to say to him, and this is allegedly, like Jason says this, but for James to look in his eye and be like, well, we can make arrangements. Because of Echo Brain?
That's so messed up.
And James has later said, you know, I just loved Metallica so much and I was so scared that I clutched him too tightly.
Yeah.
And ended up doing the opposite of what I wanted, which was to keep Jason. That's what he's kind of said later, but...
Yeah, which might be true, but...
I don't know,
but at
the
same time, I mean, you've been a band with someone like that for that long, surely you could step away for a second and be like, do I want to kick him out that quick? Or maybe back then when he was, you know, not sober, the whole time he was just waiting for a reason.
Another thing from James's side is, so Jason has said like, man, I wish they would have like called my bluff.
Yeah.
But then I've seen James say later, I really wish Jason wouldn't have quit the, like blown up in that one meeting.
Yeah.
I wish Jason had taken some more time.
Yeah.
And thought about it.
Yeah. I mean, he may have, you know.
It's just sort of that chasm that like, it's so hard to see in bands, like the Roger Waters, David Gilmour chasm. Sure. Of like, why can't you, or the Axl and Slash that until recently.
Like, why can't you get along?
Why can't you guys just be together and make great music, right. You know?
Yeah, I mean, Well, I mean, I think, you know, and we'll cover this in another episode when we do Saint Anger and Some Kind of Monster, but I mean, that whole process, I mean, was the band basically falling apart post Jason.
Oh man. Well,
very much so.
I think Jason leaving the band, I mean, people have referred to Jason as the sacrificial lamb.
Yeah.
Which I think correctly so, in that he forced James to deal, to confront some of his demons.
Yeah.
Losing Jason was like a big deal. And that scene that I sort of poked fun at a few episodes ago of the when Lars is like, he quit the band.
Quit the band, man.
What doesn't you give? Like, it really bummed them out.
Yeah. Well,
they definitely did not fight for him to stay. It doesn't seem to me.
I think they were a bit passive in that whole process where Jason quit, they didn't fight for him, but then like they're trying to in a half-assed way, like maybe work a little something out. They go to like an Echo Brain show to try to like be cool with him, and like he takes off.
Which that scene in the film is really weird because like he splits without saying bye, but that seemed weird. And Lars, and is it like Lars and Bob Rock? And they're like, well, Jason left.
I think it's Lars and Kirk.
Lars and Kirk, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't blame Jason.
And Lars sees Echo Brain, and I guess they were really good that night, and he's like really bummed about Metallica. He's in the biggest band in the world, and he's like bummed.
Bummed about Echo Brain. I'm sorry, Jason Newsted, we love you, but...
Well, I never even heard it. Was it good?
I never owned a record, but I've listened to it.
Should we kind of talk about, like...
It's okay.
Should we kind of talk about what he's done since?
I mean, there's a bunch of stuff he's done since. I mean, his last show, November 30th, 2000, VH1 Music Awards.
He joined Voivod.
Yeah, he joins Voivod from 2002 to 2008.
Which is cool. He did three records
for them. Three records, yeah. Yeah, the last record that came out from them, he played on, but wasn't in the band once it was released. And what was... I remember seeing this on, like, I don't know if it was Bass Player magazine or Guitar Player, one of those magazines, music nerd magazines. When Trujillo joined the band, he did Ozfest with Voivod on like a side stage, but played bass for Ozzy for that tour.
Right.
And Robert Trujillo had just left
Ozzy. Played with Ozzy, yeah.
So I thought that was cool. I kind of wish Jason would have kept playing with
Ozzy.
It is kind
of like a Shakespearean, like...
Yeah. It was, yeah, I think that was really cool. But, and then he wouldn't rejoin Metallica on stage until the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Which, that was cool, though.
Very cool.
I thought his little speech was cool.
His speech was great. He made it about the fans for a lot of it.
Which, I've always felt like he was like the fan favorite. He was a fan guy.
That's why people like him. People don't love Jason. I mean, Jason's a good bass player. They love him because he was the guy that was like getting the crowd hype. You're getting the crowd hyped and just like... He was the one that would reach down and shake a fan's hand.
Yeah.
He was the people's bass player, you know? He was...
Well, I heard, too, like, he was just, like, his whole first one in, last one to leave, like, he would stay and talk to fans as long as possible until the buses were rolling or whatever.
Totally.
And so then we kind of fast forward to the 30th anniversary shows, which we covered in our last episode, where he... It's such a sweet moment, man. That whole... All four of those shows were so sweet, especially with the Dave Mustaine stuff.
Yeah.
And Jason and all the love for Jason. And
yeah. Oh, I remember even one of the videos I saw, like when he walks out, like Hetfield, like gets on the mic and puts his fist up and starts going, Jason.
Yeah, it gets
Jason.
The crowd saying yeah, Jason.
Yeah, for sure. It's awesome.
And Lars says, like, man, this guy gave 14 amazing years to this band. Give it up for Jason. Like a really genuine.
I mean, some of the most amazing years, for
it's
sure.
It's bittersweet to me because it. And I, you know, I love Robert. I think Robert, Robert has grown to me some, dude, the first maybe 5 years of Robert in the band, I was just like, I can't get on board with this. I really was just like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
But it's been a long time now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been 13 fucking years.
Yeah.
So I've made peace with it, but there will always be this sort of bittersweet, like, man, if they'd have just handled it a little differently, Jason could have duked it out. If there wasn't so much pride and ego.
I mean, what would Jason have done if he was in the sessions for Saint Anger?
I mean,
clearly they had been working on the songs before because...
I don't think his presence would have made it that different in terms of what we don't... The snare sound, for example.
Or do you think he would have just quit during that session?
I think he would have wrote it out, but I think he would have slagged it.
Man.
But imagine Jason on Death Magnetic, though. It'd been great.
Oh, it would have been great.
And imagine Jason on Hardwired. It'd have been great.
Yeah.
Black Album and Load is what Hardwired sounds like.
Yeah, I think so.
Right? dang.
And some puppets and
there's some thrash. I mean, Spit on the Bone and
I'll say it again. I think it's a best of stylistically.
Okay, so I don't know what this Rockstar Supernova stuff is. What is that?
It was a TV show.
Okay.
So it was one of those shows where basically like it's like a couple guys from famous bands. It was Tommy Lee and Gilby Clark and Jason Newsted.
Okay.
And they seek out a lead singer. So it's basically like an American Idol.
Is this what
Idol
NXS did?
Kind of, yeah.
To replace Michael Hutchins?
But these guys didn't have like a pre-existing band. They've been touring forever. You know, it was like a thing for the TV show.
It sounds terrible.
It wasn't good.
It sounds like shit.
I remember watching a few episodes when
So
it
what
came
did
on.
Jason have to do with it?
He was the bass player in
a house band?
Well, no, the band was called Rockstar Supernova.
Oh, God.
I know, it's terrible.
How the mighty have fallen.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It was a bummer.
Let's just even move on from that, because I don't even want to... I'm going to...
Well, I will say in the middle of all that, there was like an accident where he had a shoulder injury because like a amp fell over and he tried to catch it or something. And he took time off from it, and the bass player from the Black Crowes filled in for him. Kind of cool.
Which the bass player for the Black Crowes, by the way, his name will forever just be bass player from the Black Crowes.
Exactly.
No one knows
his last name isn't Robinson.
No one knows who the fuck that guy is.
But yeah, other than that, he started, there was a super group, and I hate the term super group, but it was Tony Iommi, Nico McBrain from Iron Maiden, a couple other guys, and it was a band called Who Cares, which I think is...
Is that from the So What?
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, the band name Who Cares is not great.
Yeah, not good. I think
what did they do? They wrote original material?
They did like a single and a B-side or something. It wasn't much.
Oh, God.
But after that, then he did the band Newstead, where they did a four-song EP called Metal, and then a full-length called Heavy Metal Music.
I haven't heard any of it. Is it good?
I actually haven't listened to it.
Jeez.
I know we're terrible.
Everything post-Metallica is like real grim for all Newstead.
I mean, think about it. You were in fucking Metallica.
You were in the biggest metal band of all time.
Yes. Anything you do after that isn't Metallica.
Yeah.
So it might be good, but it's not Metallica.
It's not.
But I don't know, man. I'm
sorry, dude, but Who Cares is not Load.
I don't know. This is no disrespect to what Jason has done after Metallica. I know he's very passionate about what he does, and
He does art now, right?
Yeah, he does art. Well, he started to get into art when he had his shoulder injury.
Because he couldn't play for a while.
Right, couldn't play for a while. Had a long stint with rehab. So he started doing art and painting and stuff and like, you know, had a gallery exhibit, all this stuff. But
And so now he's doing this Chop House band thing,
yeah, so the
right?
Chop House was the name of his studio in California.
Right. But now he's got this sort of like Americana folk rock.
I think he's just... I mean, it's cool with me. I don't, you know, I'm no judgment. I don't think it, you know, I haven't seen him play. He hasn't released anything under the Chop House band, but I think it's just him and his buddies just getting together and playing. All I know is he's playing acoustic guitar.
Oh, really? Is he singing?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can find a couple of videos on YouTube where they're just playing, and it's just like, there's a video of him doing like, This Land Is Your Land.
Oh, Jesus. Like, the Woody Guthrie tune?
Yeah.
There's a little piece of me that has never died, that remains. I keep him in a little compartment in my heart somewhere. Okay. That Jason can join Metallica again. Well, that they can say to Robert, you know what, Robert? You stood in. You kicked ass. Time to go home.
You filled in for a little bit.
Time to go home. Jason's come back home to the family.
Or you can tech for Jason.
I'm
bummer.
Sure he would take that gig.
But, well, back to that Eddie Trunk episode with Jason Newsted.
Where he said there's something going on, right?
He talks about, it's kind of weird. He talks about, you know, having a lot of conversations with the guys, specifically
but
James and
But isn't it funny
Lars.
How they talk about it? He's like, no, yeah, like I have a phone conversation with James next Thursday.
And then
it's
he
like
says,
super
well,
like.
Then he said like, and hopefully an in-person meeting
Hopefully
or
we'll
something
do it,
like
we'll get
that.
To an in-person meeting.
Yeah.
It's just they're that insulated.
All that to say, there's something exciting going on, and I hope it's exciting. I would like to think it is.
I hope it's not exciting.
I mean, it is the
20th. There's some really boring news going on with Jason.
It'll
and Metallica.
It'll be the 20th anniversary of Reload this year.
They're just going to do Where the Wild Things Are at the Grammys.
I don't know. I mean, he definitely more than hinted that he's doing something with Metallica.
Well, he's mentioned that, like, so he's cut in, like, he's part of the business of Metallica. So he was talking about, I think it was an Eddie Trunk interview. He said, like, you know, we have meetings all the time about the business of Metallica because he has, like, stakes in, well, in yeah, Metallica.
Of course, yeah.
So when they make decisions
if
about...
they're going to remaster and release
exactly,
a record.
Remastering, publishing, mechanicals, all course, that. Yeah. You know, he's involved in all that.
Yeah.
So...
Well, I mean, it's, you know, they've had their conflicts and stuff like that, but like they have remained pretty decent friends, if not more than decent over the, you know, at least the last 10 years. I mean,
it's just hard to see even the 30th anniversary shows where he's on stage and it seems like him and Robert are super cool. It seems like him and it seems like everyone's cool in the fucking gang. But it's like, why can't you guys fucking be together?
Jason, to me, Jason just looks way more natural than Robert does.
I agree.
Even though Robert is a fantastic bass player, technically a better bass player.
For sure. Have you noticed that he's kind of like, not? He only does the crab walk now, like on For Whom the Bell Tolls. He's like...
I've never loved the crab walk, even with Suicidal Tendencies.
The crab walk sucks.
It's not great.
But he's kind of mellowed out on it. Like when Robert wears like a normal shirt instead of
a
Ninja Star
jersey
yeah, totally. And shorts, when he wears like pants and a black shirt, because he's kind of like a ripped, like he's like a stout dude.
He's a surfer, yeah. He's
like, I think Robert looks fucking cool.
Robert looks pretty metal.
But when he's wearing like basketball shorts and a fucking jersey and he's crab walking forever, I'm like, dude, this is not metal, motherfucker.
I mean...
And I know he listens, so I'm not... Robert, it's not personal.
Here come the church giggles. Robert, if you're listening, lo siento.
I got nothing but love for Robert, man. Robert has brought a lot of cool shit to the band.
Of course. And I loved Suicidal Tendencies when Robert was in the band.
What was the other band he was in?
Infectious Grooves, which was a side project of Suicidal.
Right.
But, no, I mean, Robert's a badass bass player. Badass, incredible musician.
Still miss Jason. I can't deny it, man.
Well, and I'm sure Robert is over the years felt what Jason felt about Cliff. Like, I can't fill these shoes.
Yeah.
I'm going to do my best. And I'm going to do a great job, you know? And fans accept him, of course. He does meet and greets and fans love him.
And he kicks ass on the gig. What else can we ask for?
Of course.
He's great, but... Yeah.
I don't love his backup vocals. We'll get into that on the Robert
They have episode. Gotten better, but they're they not great. Better.
Yeah, Jason, I mean...
Yeah, I
Cliff,
mean...
Cliff really didn't do that kind of stuff, but Jason owned that shit.
And as much as he wrote in Flotsam and Jetsam and then for Newstead and maybe even in Voivod, I don't know, but it is a shame that out of 14 years, we didn't get as much creative contribution as we could have from him.
Yeah.
That's sort of a blight on...
I mean, there's probably some creativeness in his bass lines, but not enough to warrant them putting a writing credit
right,
on
like
the back
King
of the
Nothing,
record.
You know.
Of course, yeah. I mean, yeah. I think it's safe to say, though, that, I mean, Jason, we want you back in the band.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of our love letter episode of Jason.
Yeah, it is,
right?
Yeah. I had some friends recently that met him here in Nashville. He came to a Jason Isbell and Casey Musgrave show.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was there, oh my God. I don't know.
All right, let's do that. Let's
I don't know
the
what
episode.
I would say.
Let's end the episode with this. What would you say to Jason Newsted? If you could ask him one question, what would you ask him?
Will you just like quit the horse shit and rejoin Metallica?
I agree with you. That's my question too.
Is that?
I doubled down on that.
Is that... pretty valid. I don't know.
Hey, Jason, nice to meet you. Can I ask you one question? Yeah, sure, man.
I will take
can you
back
be a Metallica again?
I will take back, can you quit the horse shit? Because as a musician, I know that when you get into something, you're passionate about it. It's, of course, it's not horse shit. It's
something
you're
way
into. If the Chop House Band is something that he is so into and has so much fun, great.
I know, but think about
That's
it.
Awesome.
But think about it, Ethan. Now that all this time's passed, James is a different person. He's like 15 years sober or whatever.
Yeah.
James understands now you can have the Chop House Band and still be in Metallica.
Yes. I think James would be much more understanding nowadays.
Like, guys, can't we find a way?
Right. Do you know how many side projects Green Day has?
I'm just gonna guess.
A bunch.
17.
Sure. No, there's a bunch. But guess what? There's still a gigantic fucking band that are currently selling out arenas in Europe.
God damn it.
And they have side projects because guess what? We take time off and it's fun.
I mean, some of our listeners are probably like, man, get over it, man. It's been a long time. Robert's great. I agree with all that. It's been a long time, and Robert's great. But still, Jason, can you please be a Metallica again?
Yeah.
God damn it.
Or Cliff Burton, can you come back to life?
Cliff, can you be a zombie metal bassist? Please.
Can you be a zombie tech for Jason?
Can like a radioactive sandwich fall into like a furnace that pollutes the sky with rain that brings corpses back to life? Is it too much to goddamn ask?
It's not that much to ask.
It's not. I'm being reasonable.
Gosh. Well.
Well, we love Jason. That's
yeah. There's no dogging on Jason. I mean, we may not love his projects post Metallica, but you know what? Jason loves him. Jason's passionate about him, and we can appreciate that, and we can support that.
I only don't love it because it took him away from fucking Metallica.
I know. But you know what?
I'm fired up.
I know you're fired up.
Let's do another 6 hours on this.
All right, cool. Let's get the church giggles again, and then we'll call it.
So we got a lot of fun stuff coming up for March. Thanks to everyone for listening. Where can they find us on all the bullshit stuff?
All the bullshit stuff. Or we can be like Jason and just like quit social media.
Yeah, he kind of like dropped off, right?
Oh, he 100% disappeared. I followed Newstead on Instagram. He hasn't posted in like 2 years, I think.
Wow.
Something like that. Which, it's fine, because social media is stupid.
I know, I'm ready ridiculous. To just fucking I know, but, throw my phone in the garbage.
But you know what? There's a reason that people listen to us on this podcast, and it's because of that. So, there are advantages to it. There are things you can utilize it for good.
So, we're on the Instagram and the Twitter.
Yeah,
and
Instagram
the thing
is
and
Metal
the
Up Your
Facebook
Podcast.
And...
Twitter is Metal Up Your PC. Email us at Metal Up Your Podcast.
We're on MySpace. We're on Friendster. We're yeah. on LinkedIn.
Please can...
We're on the Pen Pal.
Please check out my professional profile on LinkedIn. I would love to connect with you.
We're in the AOL chat room, Metallica54697.
Oh gosh, we need to end this now.
Write to us, metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com.
P.O. Box
666. Jason Newstead, please get back on Metallica.
You hopefully know all of our social media things by now, but
yeah.
Most importantly, send us email, send us feedback, send us questions, send us whatever.
Yeah, what do you think about Jason? I mean, is Jason your favorite? Was Jason a hack? Do you not want Jason to be back in the
band?
Do
you love Echo Brain? Do you hate Echo? What? Do you... I don't know. I mean, let us know your thoughts. We would love to hear them. We'll read stuff on the episodes.
Yeah, we're going to read shit every episode. Just send us your thoughts. Email us.
Yeah, please do. And with that, I think it's about time to finish our drinks and head our separate ways.
I agree. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.
All right.
Agree. We just made that decision.
Alcoholica. Nothing's even that funny yet.
I beg to differ.
All right, fine.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
This has to be the intro, dude.
Or this could just we could tack this on at the end after Torben, like a little bonus segment at the
okay.
end. Okay. I don't know. Let's think about it.
Okay.
I don't know why it's so funny.
This is what's officially referred to as the church giggles.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's the church giggles. It's like when you start praying at church and someone just starts tickling your hand.
All right.
There's the intro.
We have to put this at the end.
You're trying so hard to like hold it together.
It's like a fucking levee breaking, dude.
It's true.
I wonder if people really think we smoke pot or something.
For sure, people think we're super high right now. Okay. We're high on Metallica, man. I'm going to turn my level real quick.
I literally have fucking tears going up.
Sorry. Are we going to get through this whole episode?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's becoming a thing.
I know.
This is taking on life.
This whole time, we're 4 minutes in. I'm trying so hard to go, welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast, episode 11. I can't do it.
Like, we almost just have to just let it ride out. It's like, run its course.
I'm just trying to figure out what's so fucking funny.
Oh, jeez.
All right, real. This is Metallica. Get serious, Clint. Okay. This is brutal.
This sure is, dude.
It sure is, dude.
Okay, I think I might be winding down a little bit.
Please welcome our guest, Jason Newsted. Jason.
Okay.
Can you imagine if he was our guest? We actually had him here.
And we just laughed for the first 10 minutes.
He's like, cool, this is fun. You guys are so professional.
He's just sitting there the whole time, not even smiling. He's just like waiting for it all to pass.
Yeah. At some point, they're going to stop laughing, right?
Don't hold your breath, dude.
Oh my God.
This has really gotten away from us. Oh God. Just let it happen to you, dude.
I'm trying to... Do we even do this tonight? For real?
Yeah.
Jason was born. I feel like everything's a joke now.
Okay.
This whole podcast is a joke. Why are we doing this?
My whole life's a joke. I'm good. I've got my forum questions dialed up.
All right. Here, more vodka. That should help.
That's the antidote to meaningless laughter.
Yeah.
More alcohol.
Okay. You're trying hard, aren't you?
I'm good, dude. I'm professional.
I'm going to attempt to start. I'm already glancing at notes that are going to make us laugh.
I should do that. I should just start looking at notes. That'll do it.
All right.
I'm being serious, honestly. Don't look at me during the intro. I feel like if we get through the intro, we'll be cool.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Okay. I'm trying to just get the words out. Welcome to Melt Your Podcast, episode 11.
Do it one more time.